step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum. On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich and I are joined by Inside the Hall in-house bracketologist and my co-host on the Assembly Call, Andy Bottoms. Andy was unable to be with us on the post-game show after the IU-Michigan State game, so we wanted to bring him on the podcast this week so that he could get his Michigan State takes out in advance of Thursday's game against Iowa, and plus, because he just released his latest bracket, and Indiana is still holding strong in that bracket, and so we want to talk about where Indiana is right now in terms of bracketology with the resume that they have already accumulated and what they reasonably need to do down the stretch to stay in the tournament, to kind of hold on to that spot that they have right now, and how high their ceiling is if they really end up having a strong finish to the season, and again, just what the minimum is that they need to do to hang around in there. So all of that coming this week on this edition of Podcast on the Brink. And as always, Podcast on the Brink is brought to you by our friends at Home Field. And at homefieldapparel.com, you will find the comfiest and most unique licensed IU apparel that is available anywhere. Home Field was started by an IU grad, and all Home Field apparel is designed and printed out of Indianapolis. And now that we are well into 2019, and obviously well into the winter, as last week proved, although it turned very quickly this week, but such is the weather these days. But now that we're well into 2019, you can turn back the clock with Home Field's 1910 IU Crest sweatshirt, which features an IU crest from 1910. Another one of the really unique old school logos that they have at Home Field Apparel. And it is on a tri-blend fleece crew neck, which is unbelievably comfortable because it's similar material to the crew neck hoodie that has the IU Bison logo on it. Andy and I both have those hoodies. We both love them. So check out the hoodie. Check out the sweatshirt. Lots of good options there to keep you warm in the winter at Home Field Apparel. And don't forget to use the promo code BRINK at checkout, B-R-I-N-K. That will get you 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. Home Field, wear one for the team. And now, here's our conversation with Andy Bottoms. Andy, you weren't able to be there with us on the post-game show, and so I wanted to start off this week's show by just reflecting on the Michigan State win, because I have to imagine that you have some pent-up takes from that game. So what were your biggest takeaways from the IU-Michigan State game?
Well, it was funny. We were driving back from a basketball game of my daughter's, and so I was listening to Fish on my phone, and we pulled in the garage, I think probably right around when overtime was going to start, and my wife and I kind of looked at each other and were both like, yeah, we're not turning this on TV. Call us superstitious, call us what you will, but I felt as though we needed to do our part to help break losing streak. So for the duration of overtime, I basically held my phone in my hand, listened to Fish, and paced around the first floor of our house. So It was, but it was rewarded with a good game, and that made watching the game later on DVR that much less stressful because I knew it was going to happen. So,
man, that it was a stressful game. I haven't been like that nervous during a game in a while, just in the moment, like wanting them to win so badly and kind of hanging on every moment because they had just played so well. And like you said, you know, 7-game losing streak.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird mix because it was so improbable that you know, if somebody would have told you ahead of time, IU gets this game to overtime, they play really well, they have leads during, you know, portions of the game late, you'd have been, on the one hand, you'd have been, one, floored, but, you know, two, kind of like, would you just take that? But I think at that point, it kind of crossed over into the losing this game would be a different level of heartbreak, perhaps, than the ones that came before it had been, but heartbreaking nonetheless. But I mean, the big things for me were the assist numbers. I think that's one that we had talked about after the Rutgers game, where they had, I think, their first 8 made field goals, and then proceeded to have 1 assist for the final 29 minutes of the game. And it's probably no coincidence that the early part of the game is when the offense was playing relatively well, and they were getting better shots and able to knock those down. And just some of the statistical aberrations in the game were so far out of what IU had shown recently, whether that be offensive rebounding or the assist number, as I mentioned, just at the 3-point shooting. So a lot of things make it seem kind of odd, but you know, you put a little bit of it into context with having Duran back and Devontae making some big shots. Maybe it makes a little bit more sense, but then you remove Juwan from the equation and it goes back to not making very much sense. So, I think in some ways the most improbable wins are the most enjoyable. So in that regard, it was one of the more enjoyable ones that I can recall, even since we started doing the show, just because it was completely unexpected as everybody had just started to really think the season was going into an even darker place than it already was. But they found a way to do it, and yeah, now it really turns the attention to what you do with that. We've kind of said the same thing after losses at times, where the important thing is to see how they react to it. This is a different, how do they react to the success that they've had after playing so poorly for so long. So Thursday against Iowa was nice to have a few extra days off, but you kind of want that game to be here to try to figure out, is what we saw legitimate, or was it a brief mirage in the desert that the Big Ten season had become?
Well, that's a great segue into the next thing I wanted to talk about. And Alex, let's get your perspective on this first, because I mean, there were so many things that went right for Indiana in that game. I mean, as Andy just talked about, and the 3-point shooting and, you know, getting guys back, you know, so many different things. How much are you buying, you know, kind of what we saw in that game, the formula for victory? How much are you buying that is a shift that Indiana will now be able to carry into the back half of the Big Ten schedule? Or are you still skeptical that it might have just been kind of a one-night thing until you see it more often in a few more games?
Well, I think that from an optimism perspective going forward, you know, the thing I look at, you know, Archie Miller talked a lot these last couple of weeks about just needing to get a win in order to kind of get that confidence, get that feeling back. And there's really no better win that you can get in the Big Ten than winning at Michigan State or Michigan or Wisconsin, and Indiana just are Purdue. And Indiana arguably has the best win right now of any Big Ten team in conference. And so I think it's something that they can feel good about and you know, take into the next game. The one thing I noticed last game that I hadn't seen during the streak was just the ball movement was a lot better. And it's interesting that happened with Juwan out of the lineup. And I'm not sure if that has anything to do with it at all. But, you know, it was, you know, obviously Indiana's offense is really based off of getting Juwan involved as much as possible. And without him in there, it almost felt like the ball was spread around a little bit more. Other guys had some opportunities to do some things. And so hopefully, you know, that's something that they can continue to do moving forward. Because I think more than anything else, what we learned from the 7-game losing streak was Indiana wasn't going to be able to win games with just Juwan Morgan and Romeo Langford carrying the offense. And so the win over Michigan State showed that you know, they do have other guys who are capable of making plays. Two of them hadn't been playing recently. Devontae Green came in and hit, obviously, 3 3-pointers, and then Deron Davis obviously gave them a big boost in the post. But I think it's definitely a win that they can build on. I'm not willing to say it's a turning point until they're able to sustain some success over a couple of game period. And I'm not saying that if they come out and lose to Iowa that, you know, the Michigan State win didn't mean anything, because I still think, you know, they have some good basketball left in them. But I think the main thing I'm looking for them to continue to do is play offensively in a way similar to what we saw with Michigan State, because I just thought it looked a lot better. Things flowed a lot better. The movement was better. And I think Ben talks about some of those things on, you know, the basketball thing that you did with him earlier today on Assembly Call. I mean, he just kind of showed some of the ways that Indiana's movement was better. And I think that's something they need to build on going forward.
Also, Michigan State may just be in a death spiral as they've lost 3 games in a row.
They did have a lot of things go right. I mean, can't count on a team making 8 of 22 free throws, but when that does happen, you have to capitalize on it, and that's what Indiana did.
Yeah. Andy, where do you fall in terms of, you know, as you look toward Thursday, and Indiana now has a really important 2-game homestand, you know, games against Iowa and Ohio State that are solid teams, but, you know, KenPom, you know, predicts a close victory for Indiana in each one of them. And, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, here in a little bit, what Indiana needs to do from a bracketology standpoint to feel better about their position. But as you kind of look toward these games, are you anticipating seeing more of what we saw in the Michigan State game, or, you know, kind of what's your gut feeling now after the just ridiculous last 8 games for that this team has put forth?
It's hard to say, because I think you look at some of the individual pieces and how they came together in that game against Michigan State was somewhat reminiscent of what we saw earlier in the season. And I think Alex's point is an interesting one, because we had, I feel like, talked on the show a couple times about, we mentioned this with Al a couple times specifically, maybe playing better when Romeo wasn't on the floor. I don't know if the numbers bear that out, but at least from an eye test perspective, kind of felt that way. And I think, while I don't think anyone would argue that IU is better, you know, with Juwan Morgan on the bench, with Romeo Langford on the bench, I do think at least one of those guys being off the floor really forces other guys to play with a bit more confidence and do some things that maybe they, in situations where they might defer to those guys otherwise. And so there was a huge opportunity for a number of guys to be able to step up and fill the void that was left when Juwan went out. And so many guys were able to piece together the kinds of things that he does and the ways that he impacts the game. So I think that's a positive. I think if you believe in the whole theory of confidence and what role that plays, it certainly is a team that went into that game with very little, or at least seemed to have very little reason to have much confidence, and I would assume walked out with quite a bit. So that's a positive, but it's also a team that we've seen a couple things go wrong, and then it snowballs pretty quickly into a situation where things get away from them. Archie's mentioned some of those things as well. So that's where you really want to see another game, and can they be that connected? But I think defensively, the effort was back to what we saw at the beginning of the year, and that's really where it has to start with the team that's, I don't think, ever going to be fantastic offensively. And so seeing them do some of the things defensively that were successful earlier in the year was a positive step. And as silly as it probably sounds, just seeing some emotion and seeing guys look like they were actually having fun playing for the first time, and I'm not even sure how long, was somewhat reassuring that, you know, the love of the game and the joy of playing was still in some of these guys, because there were long stretches in games where you could watch this team play and kind of wonder, you know, how much excitement they really had to play. So hopefully those are the kinds of things that can carry over. And I think in some coin flip type games, those could be the difference if they're able to sustain that effort going forward.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Alex, Archie said something interesting in the post-game press conference, you know, talking about the leadership and talking about that, how they had kind of gotten some clarity, I think was the word that he used for that. Do you have any idea, any guesses or anything about what that might have meant? Because, you know, certainly we saw a different team. You know, we saw more enthusiasm. We saw a team that looked more connected. We saw guys like Al and Justin be more vocal than we've really ever seen them be before. What do you think Archie meant by that when he talked about having more clarity when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, I caught that too. It was interesting. I think having Devontae and Duran back and contributing, I think, was part of what he was hinting at. You know, they need their upperclassmen to be productive. And in a game where Juwan, I think, what, played only 10, 13 minutes, something like that, I think he went out later in the first half.
Yeah.
Those guys really stepped up and, you know, made plays that you need juniors and seniors to make in a road game. And then you mentioned, you know, Justin Smith and Al Durham. I think particularly, you know, Al's been a guy the last couple of games we've all talked about kind of his growth and just maybe his willingness to maybe speak up on the court and kind of, you know, even when they were losing games, he was showing emotion and showing that fire. But the thing that impressed me the most, maybe the last game, was Justin Smith and his growth defensively, because those two blocks that he made, you know, we talk about everything else in that game. There were so many plays that you look back on, you say, wow, they don't win without this happening. But those two blocks, I mean, I don't think we've talked enough about them. And it's, those are two plays that he probably doesn't make earlier in the season or during the losing streak, but those are the little things that guys have to do, you know, if you're going to win in a situation like that. So, you know, I think leadership can come from guys just knowing their role and knowing kind of what they have to do on a night in and night out basis. And a win like that can show guys, hey, you know, these are the things I need to be good at on a game in, game out basis in order for the team to win. And so the way he phrased it, I think you mentioned he talked about we have clarity on that. You know, maybe he's talking about kind of realizing, you know, these are the things that I need to be good at on a game in, game out basis for us to reach our potential as a team. So I think that was kind of my takeaway from it.
Andy, did you hear those comments? What did you think about those?
It was interesting because I think it feels like you saw where it seems to have been heading into this, really, Juwan was the de facto leader, I think, based on being a senior, coming back, things like that. But I think it felt like, at least during the game, you saw some other guys step into those roles as well. You know, you mentioned Al and Justin, and there was that one exchange they had, I think it was in the Rutgers game, where they were not heated on the court, but they were kind of going back and forth at each other, trying to figure some things out. And I thought that we talked about that on the show, that was a good sign that, you know, really, again, kind of showed a little bit of fire and things like that. So I think it's hard in those scenarios where you need somebody to really step forward, and it seems like there's a default pecking order of where that might go. And while I think Juwan, in a number of ways, probably is the leader of this team, I think there was room for other guys to step in and fill some of that void as well, whether that's being vocal on the court. Juwan has, you know, kind of struck everybody, I think, as a very much a lead by example, hard work type guy, but I don't know that he was, you know, he would show emotion from time to time, but I don't know that he was a, you know, getting guys' faces, at least not, you know, on the court in the game, and those kinds of things. And so it seemed like Al and Justin started to do a few more of those things. I think the presence of Duran was really big in that regard, as an older guy who's been around the program for a while. So I think just having additional options there, which actually makes it seem like there's a little bit less clarity, because I've just named five guys who might be, you know, trying to fill that void. But you know, there probably is some kind of pecking order within that, but I thought you saw good signs of leadership and communication from a number of guys, which was, you know, far more than what we had seen before that. So I think those are positive things. And particularly as you spin it forward to next year, Juwan's not going to be here. You know, there were starting to be a lot of questions after the losing streak of, oh yeah, you think this isn't great now. Well, then you lose Juwan Morgan, you lose Romeo. The junior class was getting a lot of heat. What's going to happen from there. And so I think this at least gives some potential answers for what that might look like even going forward, and how you start to build that culture where you've got that leadership that's being passed down from one class to the next.
One more question I want to ask about the Michigan State game, and if there are any other angles you guys want to hit, let me know. But, you know, Alex, in terms of Romeo, I kind of feel like Romeo's performance in the Michigan State game has been underrated a little bit, because his efficiency, you know, wasn't great. He was 6 of 18. Obviously, the shot at the end of regulation wasn't great, but he made some huge plays late for Indiana. You know, the runner that put Indiana up one at the end of regulation, the catch-and-shoot three-pointer, which he's been so bad at this year that he drained in overtime, that put Indiana up and they wouldn't relinquish it again, you know, made free throws, you know, consistently was a guy that when the moment asked for it, wanted the ball, and for the most part made the right decisions outside of that, you know, that final shot in overtime. And you've watched him a lot. Has he always been known as a guy that, you know, in tight pressure situations wants the ball and typically comes through in those situations? Because, you know, again, his numbers have been better, but I thought in terms of making meaningful plays, you know, in a big game, I was as impressed with him as I've been all season long.
Yeah, I mean, he's always been a scorer, not a shooter, a rhythm guy, a guy who, when he gets some confidence, he can get on a run, and that's kind of what he did in the second half. And the interesting thing to me was that was the most, and I've watched him play a lot of basketball games, including high school games, AAU, and then Indiana this season. That was the most emotion I've ever seen him show in a basketball game. And I'm not sure if it was a result of, you know, the fact that they'd been on a 7-game losing streak and he really wanted that win, or it was, hey, I'm, you know, this is what I need to do to kind of, you know, motivate my teammates or keep everyone else engaged on the court. But it was an interesting, just game to watch kind of how he, over the course of the game, his confidence grew once he started hitting shots late, and just to see the emotion, kind of the look in his eyes, some of those shots that ESPN showed of him, it looked like a different player out there. You know, people have always asked, you know, is Romeo, does he not care? Is he always stoic? Is that just kind of how he is? And that was really the first time I'd ever seen him, you know, just kind of showing emotion out there. And I think it was great to see. I'm not sure if it's something that we're going to continue to see in every game moving forward, but I think it spoke more than anything to me about the competitor that he is and how bad he wanted that win. You could just kind of see him when he had the ball late, you knew that he was going to make a play. Now, obviously, the shot at the end of regulation was probably one that he wanted back, but that runner that he made late in regulation was an incredibly difficult shot. The three-pointer in overtime, all those plays, you know, you have to embrace those situations if you're going to make that play. You know, if you don't, you're not, those shots don't go in. So I think it speaks to even though the Indiana had been struggling as a team and they'd been on that losing streak, that he was still confident enough to step up and make those plays.
So as we start to look forward, one of the other things that we think about coming out of that Michigan State game is the importance of Deron Davis. And he was terrific. You know, it's been talked about a ton since then. I would really recommend anybody who hasn't listened to his post-game interview, I thought it was one of the more entertaining player interviews of the season. Number one, just because Deron has a great personality, and so it's, you know, it's fun to listen to him, as anybody who's watched those, you know, the social media videos that he's done has seen. But there's just, he is so confident, you know, and he kind of has that attitude, and I think it kind of rubs off on the guys when he's out there, you know, because he believes he's going to get a bucket every time he gets the ball. And we know his limitations in terms of movement and obviously his ability to, you know, to stay healthy. But he's been a guy who's been really productive, and Indiana has just been better when he's been able to play. And I think that's in part because of, you know, what he brings as being a good postman and a good defender. But also just when he's on the court, you know, I think that confidence can rub off on guys that maybe have struggled with that a little bit. And so the first question I want to ask you, Alex, is do you have any indication? I mean, he played a lot of minutes. And that certainly wasn't the plan, you know, as he's still recovering from that ankle injury he suffered in the Illinois game. Do you have any indication of how he's responded to that, and if the expectation on Thursday against Iowa, when he'll really be needed again because they have two really good post players, if he's expected to be able to take on, you know, a full load, which I would imagine for most games will probably be 15 to 20 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, we'll hear from, I believe tomorrow we'll hear from Archie Miller and his pregame availability. So that's when I would expect to get a full update. But as far as I know, he hasn't had any setbacks. And I would assume they're probably going to take it as easy as possible on him, because there's going to be soreness, obviously, between games. And he'd played a total of 27 Big Ten minutes through 10 games coming into Michigan State game. And he goes out and plays 25. So that's obviously going to be a key for him to be able to be fresh, to bounce back. You're going to have to limit his exposure in practice and keep him as fresh as possible. But, you know, I think that the whole purpose of shutting him down after, I'm not sure, I know there was three games he missed.
Yeah.
Was that right? And he really played limited minutes in the games before that. So my understanding was shutting him down was with the intention of getting him healthy and ready for the stretch run. So I would expect that he's going to be able to go come Thursday night.
So Andy, as we start to project forward, you know, a lot of people have seen the numbers, you know, how good Indiana has been when they have all their pieces, you know, when Devontae and Allen, Rob and Duran have all been able to play with Romeo and Juwan. You know, this has been a team that's beaten some really good teams and projects to do well moving forward. But, you know, knock on wood, all of those things, given all the injury issues that we've had. So as we look forward, you know, in terms of bracketology and Indiana making something of this season, despite the 7-game losing streak, your latest bracket came out. You have the Hoosiers in there as a 10 seed. Can you kind of explain where Indiana sits right now with everybody else? And as you kind of try to project them forward, what you think they need to do to maintain that and stay in the field? And then kind of what the ceiling is on how high their seed could potentially go if they're able to finish strong.
Yeah, I spelled out some of this last week in the opening to the bracket to talk about IU. Now that was, you know, either well-timed or ill-timed before the Rutgers loss. But a lot of it was to say and remind people that a couple things. What the committee says they look at is the entire body of work. They don't weight the most recent games any more than any others, which didn't used to be the case. I think the record in the last 10 or 12 games is something that used to be pretty prominently featured on the team sheets as they went through. And that did really matter. And, you know, one of the examples cited from last year, there were really a couple good ones last year. Now, these were teams a lot of people said shouldn't be in, but Oklahoma and Arizona State both fell in that category where they get off to really hot starts. They really struggled in conference play, picked up some not so great losses, and probably in some cases some losses that might even be worse than some of the ones that IU picked up over this stretch. And, you know, they both made it because, you know, right or wrong, we can debate the merits of the way that the committee does this and how it skews things toward major conference teams. But the volume of quality wins, so whether that's quad one, quad two wins, the volume of those plays a pretty big role in whether you get in or not. Now, at some point, the losses matter and you can't go out and lose, you know, every game. Texas would certainly be a lot higher in the bracket this week if they didn't have, you know, 10 losses, I believe. And IU probably would be as well if they didn't have 9. You know, the losses do matter, but at the end of the day, you know, the quality wins that IU is able to hang its hat on right now are a lot better than ones that teams around them would have. But they also have more losses than some of those teams, so it's a balancing act in that way. But nobody can take away those wins from you. Those still matter, and they don't matter. You know, the Marquette game doesn't matter less because it happened in November. The Louisville game doesn't matter less because it happened in December. And I think those are important things to remember. Doesn't mean you can go out and drop every game from here on out and still feel good about it. But, you know, the equity that was built up from those wins didn't magically go away during the 7-game losing streak, even though it felt like everything was, you know, caving in on the team at that point. From a bracketology perspective, that really wasn't true.
Yeah.
And losing games that way can help you plummet a little bit more toward the cut line. But you know, they weren't really, for me this week, they weren't really in the mix for the, you know, the last four teams in. So they're a little bit clear of that at this stage. And I think what you have to like at this point about the remaining schedule is that there really are very few landmines to step on at this point. Really, those last two games are the two that you would point to and say, yeah, you probably don't want to lose these. Although apparently going into Illinois is a very difficult place for teams to win now, based on what we've seen even earlier tonight. So,
and we've lost two straight against Rutgers, so we're not about to disrespect them.
Absolutely not. No, we would never. We would never do that. So, you know, those are really the two games that are that maybe you get less credit for winning. Although if Illinois continues to play well and they've got a schedule that suggests they could rack up some wins, you know, even that could work its way into a quad one win, because if they can get into the top 75 of the net, that a road win there would become a quad one win, and certainly a loss there wouldn't necessarily be viewed as a bad one. So the good thing about the work that the Big Ten did in the offseason is that it basically set every team up to have an opportunity for a quality win in virtually every game that they play. That also means the schedule is really tough, but it does give you a lot of chances where if you take on a couple more losses, you can balance that out by being able to pick up some big wins at home and having a road win. Even though IU's road record is not very good in total, having a road record like winning at Michigan State is one that will pay dividends as well. Although, you know, I would argue it wouldn't hurt to pick up another road win somewhere along the way down the stretch, because I think I used 2-7 maybe on the road. Maybe that's not right. Maybe 2-5, something to that effect. It's not good. So it's seven.
Yeah, it's seven.
Okay. It was seven. I was thinking that was wrong, but then I was like, no, they have played that many road games. So, so that's not great, but you pick up another one. There's certainly teams out there that have no road wins and one that are further back in the field than IU at this point. So definitely not a place where you should feel super comfortable, but I think they've hopefully stopped the bleeding enough and pick up a few of these wins here down the stretch, and they should be in decent shape.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Andy, one of the questions I get most often, whether it be on Twitter, via email, on the forum, is what does Indiana have to do the rest of the way to get in? And people will ask, is there a certain number of Big Ten wins? Is there a certain number of total wins where you feel good about the chances? Is it a matter of, you know, if they only win 8 Big Ten games, are they going to have to go to Chicago and win 2 Big Ten tournament games? I know these are all hypothetical things, and it kind of depends on who they beat the rest of the way. But is there, from your perspective, obviously they're not going to win out, but what do they have to do to feel good about themselves come Selection Sunday at this point? They've already got 9 losses. So, I think we can all agree that they're going to take a couple more, but at what point do you...
I disagree with that statement.
What... Hey, Jared. What do they have to do to feel, I guess, confident?
I think that, you know, there's some teams out there that have had quite a few. I was trying to look up while we were talking here what some of the, you know, records are for the most losses by an at-large team getting into the field. So there's certainly precedent for teams being under 500 in conference play getting into the field, which, while probably not advisable, is at least, something that we have seen in the past. So I think 14 or 15 might be the most, losses. I think Vanderbilt a couple years ago had 15, I want to say.
Helps to do it in a year when you're in a conference where the national narrative is how good the conference is.
Well, and that was one of the things. I mean, if I remember that Vanderbilt team correctly, I mean, they really didn't have a lot of bad losses, and they had beaten Florida a couple times, and that really helped their case. They had a few good wins, and they really hung their hat on not having a bad loss, which the committee has done. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. It's just, you know, avoiding shooting yourself in the foot. I'm not sure that's better than, you know, actually going out and winning more quality games, but be that as it may, there's a component of that. So I wouldn't necessarily say finishing under 500 in the conference is a death sentence for the team at all. I do wonder if you get to an 8-12, we're in a 20-game, you know, Big Ten season, you're 4 games under 500. That feels not great. 9-11, if you're going to be under 500, feels a little bit better. I certainly think if they would get to 10 Big Ten wins, you know, they go 6-3 in these final 9 games. At least 4 of those would be really quality wins, even if 2 of those wins came in those Illinois and Rutgers games. You want 4 other games, you know, those 4 wins would all, you know, carry a lot of weight, and none of the losses would be ones that would hurt you. So I'd feel really good at that point. I think you could probably finish 9-11, dependent upon who you lost to and things like that, and feel okay. The thing that's hard about this is that it really, you're not trying to get to a finish line per se or a given total. You're really comparing yourself to other teams, and what you do, or what happens to you depends as much on what other teams do as it does on what you do. And so you start to look at some of the other, you know, non-power conference teams that might have a chance in an at-large if they don't win their conference tournament. And you start to get into some of those kinds of scenarios where you're hoping to not have a bid stealer or things like that. But I guess if I would say, you know, these final 9 games, I think if you finish 5-4 in those games to be 19-11 or 9-11 in the Big Ten, I think you'd feel okay. I think you win any more than that, you're feeling really confident. You win less and go, you know, 4-5 and you end up 8-12. I think that probably puts some extra importance on the Big Ten tournament, which I know makes everybody feel really, really calm and comfortable inside.
It also should be noted that every team that we've mentioned here, you know, that backed into the tournament, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, Arizona State, none of them won a game in the tournament. So we're kind of looking at them because we're just coming out of this 7-game losing streak where it kind of felt like the season was over. So it's to give some perspective that, you know, hey, you know, not only is the NCAA tournament still possible, Indiana would probably be in it if the field were selected today. But when you look at a schedule that has 6 home games, you know, you'd certainly expect that Indiana is able to do enough down the stretch that they're not just kind of backing in, you know, that they can get up to a 7 seed. Like, what do you think is the ceiling on with a reasonable finish? You know, like if Indiana goes 6-3, 7-2 down the stretch, and what we saw against Michigan State is somewhat of a harbinger of what's to come. Like, what? How high could Indiana's seed reasonably go?
That's a tough one. I'd like to go back to what you said a minute ago, talking about how these teams are going to lose. You and I both know as well as anyone that if IU gets into the field, you're going to talk yourself into how they can make it to the Elite Eight or something of that nature.
So but that's what I do. That's
yeah.
I know. I will.
We all have.
I will, but the precedent will not be on my side.
Andy, let's not forget that he is the guy on the Over Under podcast that also had a lot of pushes. So we're never going to let him leave that down.
That's also true. You know, I think the ceiling with the number of losses that they have, you know, let's say they got the, you know, 6-3 and they ended up 10-10 in the Big Ten. I mean, I think if you assume they're a 10 now, I think they could ascend to maybe a 7, maybe a 6, depending upon how that would go. I think getting much higher than that feels like a stretch or would take a much, you know, maybe a 7-2 performance in these last games or something like that. I think you could maybe talk yourself into that because reality is, you know, the losses do matter. And so I think you're going to have a hard time getting up too far. Even if you take on, you know, 2-3 more losses, you're going to be at 12. So how high can you really get, even if you end up with, you know, maybe 8, you know, quad one wins and things like that. So I would say maybe 6-ish is the ceiling. And I think a lot of things would have to go well for them to get to that point. But again, it's somewhat dependent upon what other teams do, but at least as a, you know, kind of ballpark guess, I'll kind of throw that one out.
How you talked a little bit about this, but I'm curious from your perspective. Let's say that Jared's prediction of them winning out doesn't come true, and they are something like 8-12 or 9-11. How much weight do those non-conference wins carry when you get down to the, you know, the say you're putting together your final bracket, you're looking at the last couple teams, the other bubble teams aren't going to obviously have Michigan State win or a Louisville win or Marquette win in all likelihood. How much weight can those wins ultimately carry?
Well, one of the things that the NCAA has started to, I guess they've done this in the past, although I don't know that they've ever given great visibility to it, but on the team sheets themselves, there's So they have the quadrants, but then they also have the quadrants. They've started to display things where they're split into even kind of like an upper tier of the first quadrant or things of that nature. So it's, I don't know, I guess that's splitting into eighths at this point. But when you look at it that way, IU's got a few wins that would even fall in that, you know, kind of top end of the first quadrant. So today, at least is the one I'm looking at now. So the Michigan State win and Louisville both fall into that, and Marquette's just outside of it. So it's basically if Marquette would get into the top 15 of the net, IU would have, you know, three of those really, really top end wins. And with a couple of those coming in the non-conference, those are always important as well. And I think can, you know, again, I say a lot of things that the committee says this. We can all form our own opinions whether we think that they follow this or not, but they say the conference record doesn't matter, conference affiliation and all those kinds of things. We can debate whether that's true or not, but at that point, those, you know, the fact that you were, you know, below 500 in the Big Ten doesn't necessarily matter. They're looking at the wins, and I think at that point, where being under 500 matters is just the number of losses that you end up accumulating in order to do that. So I do think of many of the teams that are around where IU is going to, you know, is right now on the bubble would struggle to have, you know, the kind of high end wins that they do. And if there are teams around them that do have those really good wins, they're typically there because they picked up a lot of losses. Texas, I mentioned earlier, you know, they've got a few really good wins, but they've also got 10 losses at this point in the season. So it gets a little bit difficult, but most of the teams that are just outside the field, there's really nothing compelling about their resumes in terms of who they beat. You know, Butler is one of those teams. And so IU fans would probably love to see Butler win enough games to make a good case where they should be in the field. But right now they just don't have a lot there. Florida's the same way. And so some of those teams right around the cut line just haven't proven that they've been able to beat good teams, even inconsistently been able to beat good teams. And so while IU has been pretty inconsistent at some points, you know, you've got that you can hold up and say, look, this is one of the better teams because they've proven on multiple occasions at this point they can beat good teams. Now, can they stub their toe and look pretty bad? Sure. But I do think those kinds of high end wins would separate them from other teams if they found themselves in a similar position on the seed list as they would be today.
On our Banner Monday broadcast, we talk with Mike DeCourcy, and we've talked with him about, you know, this notion of the Big Ten getting 9 or 10 teams into the tournament. And his contention has been that the bottom of the conference is too good for that to happen. Just because, you know, like, even, I mean, Penn State obviously has been terrible this year, but they, you know, they almost beat Purdue. Illinois obviously is rising up. Rutgers has proven to be, you know, pretty difficult for teams to beat. You know, we'll have to see what comes of Nebraska for the rest of the season because they've been struggling and Northwestern hasn't really shown a lot lately. But what do you kind of see right now in terms of the Big Ten and how it's shaping up for the number of teams they could get in?
Nebraska is probably the one that I had them just on the outside of my projections this week. They're a little bit of a tricky situation because of the Isaac Copeland injury. So again, committee says they take those things into account. He's obviously not going to be back for the remainder of the season. So they have to attempt to evaluate them as what they are without him, which is at this point a limited sample size, but you know, they've lost 5 straight. He went out about halfway through that 5-game losing streak. And when you look at their top end wins, they're against a lot of teams that are right around the bubble. So their best win is really the one at IU at this point. They won at Clemson, who wouldn't be in the field if it started today. They won at home against Creighton, who I had, you know, as one of the first teams out, and then Seton Hall, they beat them at home. They're one of the last teams in. So in terms of top end wins, they don't really have any. They don't necessarily have a bad loss. They've lost at both Rutgers and Illinois. But again, those are both top 100 KenPom teams at least. And so you can look at it that way. So I think if there's a team that's going to fade at this point, it's probably them. And then you've got IU and Ohio State, you know, both under 500 in the league at this point that are right there. So I do think it's going to be hard because I don't see, you know, it's hard to see Nebraska rebounding to turn around and really play their way back in. Especially their next 3 games. They've got home against Maryland, at Purdue, and home against Minnesota. If they lose those 3, they're in deep trouble. They're already at 11 losses, and they still have road trips to Michigan and Michigan State and home games with Purdue and Iowa. So if you look at the schedule, they would seem to be the team, given their current personnel situation and everything else, that feels most likely to play their way out of that. So the 10 definitely seems unlikely and probably always did. But certainly the way that the lower end teams have played, you know, to Mike's point, that's really made it difficult for everybody else to accumulate enough wins as they go. So I feel like 8 or 9 feels pretty safe at this point, based on how teams have performed so far and where people currently sit in the standings.
Alex, if I set the over-under at 1.5 for Big Ten teams with new coaches next season, would you go over or under?
Over.
Would the two be Penn State and Nebraska?
Yeah, and I still think there's a chance that Minnesota, depending on what they do the rest of the way,
yeah,
that could still have a chance. I mean, I know Andy's got them pretty comfortably in, but they still have, obviously, they're not a lock to make it by any stretch right now. So, but yeah, I mean, Penn State comes down to, you know, this is the eighth year for Pat Chambers, and really his resume after this year is going to be an NIT championship and a CBI appearance. Those are his two postseason appearances. And Tim Miles, it just feels like a pretty clear breaking point if they're not going to make the tournament this year. You know, I think he made the tournament his second year there and then would have not made it there since. And Glenn Watson's a senior. Palmer Jr. is a senior. Copeland obviously is gone. I would think Roby's probably going to be out of there if he can even be picked in the second round. So, what are they, you know, what would they hold on to Miles for after this year if they can't make the tournament this year? So, I feel pretty confident that those two jobs could open.
So Thursday night, as we turn our attention toward the Iowa game, we did a preview of this on Banner Monday, and Alex, Thursday morning, we're going to release an episode of the matchup with Ben and Seth. They're going to look ahead to the Iowa game and the Ohio State game, but they'll have kind of a more complete preview. That'll go out Thursday morning, right? The matchup?
Okay. Yes, it will.
So just real quick, thoughts on Iowa. Andy, we'll start with you. It's always a treat when Frisky Fran comes into Simon Scott Assembly Hall and starts yelling in every direction. What are your, and Iowa's been a little bit better. I mean, they've lost two of their last three, but the one win was over Michigan, and it was by double digits, so that was obviously impressive. What do you think are some of the most important keys for Indiana to get this victory?
Well, I think you hit on a bunch of them on Banner Monday as you went through that. You know, Iowa is kind of what they have feels like they've been the last few years, really explosive offensively, and a struggle on the defensive end, and this year seems to be no different. Although I think at times they've shown improvement defensively, but in conference play at least they're dead last in the Big Ten to this point. So inefficiency. You know, it feels like a game where IU should be able to, if they can move the ball the way they did against Michigan State, there will be good shots to be had, that they'll be able to score. Defensively, they certainly present some challenges for IU. They want to play fast. They try to spread you out. They've got a lot of guys that can shoot threes, so it'll be challenging for IU to make sure they get, you know, stay in rotation and get out to shooters as best they can. And so they've got a few, you know, a good inside-outside, you know, combination. Tyler Cook and Luca Garza are good guys along the front line. Garza can step out and make threes on occasion. And then you've got, you know, Jordan Bohannon feels like he's been there forever, who can make threes. Isaiah Moss is shooting 46% from three, something like that. So they've got a lot of guys who can make shots. So I think, you know, limiting clean 3-point looks is going to be a big one on that side of the floor for IU. Iowa isn't a huge offensive rebounding team, so that bodes well for IU, who at least until the Michigan State game had some trouble in that regard, and I was really good at getting to the line. So IU, while the depth feels like it's getting a little bit better as some of the guys get back, certainly can't put themselves in a situation where they're picking up a bunch of fouls and getting deep into the bench, giving Iowa easy points at the free throw line, because I'm not sure we can count on another, you know, 8-for-22 performance from the free throw line from an opponent.
We have the fourth best free throw defense in the country, so
really, really something to hang your hat on. But you know, so I think, you know, Iowa poses a lot of challenges offensively. So if IU can find ways to slow them down, I think IU can score enough against what they do defensively to be able to win. And I think galvanized by the win at Michigan State, the crowd will be really into it. I think some of the folks are starting to turn on the team a bit in the last home game, and maybe in some ways, not rightfully so, but understandably so, based on what they saw. But I think you'll find a rejuvenated Assembly Hall or Assembly Hall audience that will be there and ready to cheer them on. So hopefully good things to come. Be good to get off to a good start. I know that feels like a broken record for what we've seen this year, but I think if they can come out and show early on that some signs that the Michigan State game wasn't a fluke, that becomes really important. It really just, you get things rolling downhill in a good way as opposed to a bad way, how they were going into East Lansing.
Alex, who guards Jess Settles in this matchup?
I don't know. That's tough, man. Mike Gisele will be running point. And
does any team seem like they've had guys who are there forever, like Iowa? Is there any
that Andy said Jordan Bohannon? I think he's only a junior. I'm pretty sure he's only a junior.
That seems about right.
But he was starting when he was a freshman. Yeah. I swear, Iowa always has a guy where it feels like he's been there forever.
Yeah.
Nicholas Bear, he seems like he's been there forever. He's on their team right now.
Yeah. Oh, he actually is a senior, though, so that's positive.
Yeah,
Bohannon is a junior. Get out of here. It's ridiculous. Same with Tyler Cook. How's he only a junior? Who knows?
Tyler Cook's only a junior?
Yeah, exactly.
He's tried to go pro the last 2 years, so you can only take... You can only take Fran Khan 9 or 10 so many times, and then you have to leave Iowa City. So,
was Indiana ever seriously considered with Garza? I know we were recruiting him. Was it ever a legit chance that we'd get him? That was Crean's last recruiting class, I think, right?
Yeah, I don't think he ever visited.
Okay,
so
I knew he'd been mentioned.
I think Deron Davis is going to have to play a lot of minutes in this game because. Otherwise, you're looking at Juwan on Garza, I'm guessing, and Justin Smith on Tyler Cook. That could be a recipe for...
It could be rough.
Foul trouble. Jake Forrester might have to give his 5 fouls again, so...
Mm-hmm. In 8 minutes?
It's funny because you look at the upcoming schedule, and we talked a little bit about Deron earlier, but, I mean, these next few games, you got Iowa with Garza, who, again, is a little bit more mobile than some of the other big guys, but he is a bigger guy that... Deron will have to guard. Then you've got Ohio State with Wesson, and you got Minnesota with, I guess Jordan Murphy, you throw him in there, Purdue with Travion Williams, and you go back to Iowa again. So a lot of opportunities where there are guys that Deron will need to make work on the one end and make life hard for them on the other.
Then Ethan Happ coming up a little bit later.
Well, he's just going to travel right around him. We all know that.
The big man is not dead in the Big Ten. All right, gentlemen, thanks for joining me for another great conversation. Again, the matchup will be tomorrow. Ben and Seth will be here with a more complete preview of the Iowa game. And we'll be back next week. We're planning on talking with Jordan Hulse next week, Alex. So I originally wanted to get him on to kind of get his perspective on what it's like to, kind of deal with a lot of losing and deal with a losing streak. But hopefully Indiana will have picked up a win or two by then, and we'll be on a little bit of a winning streak so we can get his perspective on what it's like to do that, because he did both. So really anything you want perspective on IU basketball, just ask Jordan Hulse, because he pretty much went through it all. So he'll have some kind of perspective.
That checks out.
Yes. So we're planning on talking with him. So barring some kind of scheduling snafu, that'll be coming next week, which we really look forward to. So thanks, guys. Any final thoughts before we sign off?
I don't think so. Ready to see if, like I said, I think everybody's anxious to see whether Saturday was the real deal and this team has truly turned a corner, or whether there's a reversion back to what we were seeing before that, or maybe somewhere in the middle. So looking forward to Thursday night to do that.
Absolutely. All right, go Hoosiers, and we will talk to you guys next week on Podcast on the Brink. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. Remember to join me and my co-hosts for more IU basketball talk at assemblycall.com, and visit Alex over at insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana basketball. If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.